Welcome, everybody, to Space Force. I'm your host, Jason Tondro.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Aid Smith. Hello.
And
I'm also wearing a hat, by the way. You just can't see me.
Yeah. Jim is seizing the opportunity to dress in pure and 100% Carl style.
Yeah.
Carl has got to be the most one of the many interesting things in this very interesting episode. We're here for Terra Firma Part 1, the first of a two-part unexpected for me, Mirror Universe plotline, Return to the Mirror Universe. Did we or did we not? Right, exactly. We will debate that. But before we get into this episode, which I think is really interesting, there's a lot here to dig into. Before we get into it, we have a little bit of a Star Trek news. Jim?
Last night, the wife of Dave Galantale, who's a Star Trek novelist, most recently he wrote the Stamets novel, or Star Trek Discovery's line, he passed away of cancer.
Wow.
So I thought we should at least acknowledge his presence. I've read a couple of his books. Actually, the funny story was, I was thinking about this. I received his books, his first two duologies, Maximum Warp for the Next Generation line, as a graduation present.
Yeah.
My parents couldn't afford much, so they bought me Star Trek novels.
Yeah, and sure.
So those two books, you know, they had a special spot in my, you know, my life. And
yeah.
I'm a little saddened to hear that he passed.
He clearly has been part of the Star Trek universe for a long time.
Yeah, since 2001, I think that's when his, I think he may have had a novel before those, but that was what I remembered him for, was those. And then he did, his first solo novel was Troublesome Minds, which had a gorgeous Spock cover on it. It's like Spock in meditation pose. And that's sort of emblazoned in my memory too.
We also have some interesting news, very exciting news for Star Trek Adventures. Aid?
Yes, so we have on the last mail they put out, Modiphius themselves. This is not insider stuff. This is frequently you people may know this, but yeah. The exciting news is apparently they have expanded their partnership to include Discovery and Picard products in their line. So, which is pretty damn interesting. So we shall see what that entails.
I'm very interested to hear how they choose to capitalize on that, right? Like, are we going to get another rule book, like the Klingon one that's out this week, where it's got all of the rules for the game, as well as setting information and unique stuff, kind of along the lines of what Fantasy Flight did with the Star Wars line, where there were like four different rule books for that game that were two-thirds the same, but one third unique and one third was just enough to make me have to buy all of them, right? Or is it going to be more like the other source books Modiphius has put out for like the Alpha Quadrant and the Beta Quadrant, for example, where, you know, it's just a source book and you can use the rules to play, a separate rule book to play. So everything in the book is new.
So the cool thing being, more than anything else is as well, is for the, if it takes a while to get those books in development,
yeah.
The idea now that stuff that happens in Discovery and Picard cannot be mentioned in Adventures or anything else that come out as PDFs
is
fantastic. So I'm assuming crews will be one, the actual crews or the ships will be some of the first things they do. But the idea that someone's out there got that monk storyline there ready for a next generation encounter with them in that time period or whatever, and that's going to, you know, that's going to be a thing. I think. Even just background material about Romulans and Romulus and all that kind of stuff we've touched on. All this happened X amount of years ago. Now they can actually acknowledge that and they haven't got to steer their ship around it all. So that's pretty cool.
There's a lot of...
Well, I think, like, just thinking of this, like, globally speaking, like, if I had my druthers and I was made idle, the Discovery book would need new rules because you'd have to factor in the spore drive.
Oh, yeah.
You have to gamify the spore drive, which is... So much of Star Trek is the get from point A to point B, and now you've removed that in your game.
But do you also reprint all the rules for character creation and task resolution?
I think with Discovery you would, But with Picard, you'd make it a continuation like they'll Quadrant book.
What I'm hoping for is an Aliens of the Galaxy book. And now we've got these two series. That at least is a starting point. Now we can start introducing all these characters we've seen in Discovery and in Picard, right, and use those alien races in there and say, well, they've been around since day one. You just didn't see them yet.
So now when you do the Aliens book, you can have Kelpians in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I want to write up those guys.
Yeah.
I would also, like, one day I hope that they can get the license to do Lower Decks as a kid-friendly game.
Yes.
They strip down Rules Vulsion, kind of like, this is your pick up and play.
Yeah.
You know, we've got seven kids who want to play Star Trek. Here you go.
Don't do it with Lower Decks. Do it with the new show that hasn't come out yet.
Oh, right. Prodigy.
Yeah.
Do it with Prodigy, because Lower Decks is not really kid friendly.
That's true. I was thinking like animated cartoon alt.
But a Lower Decks board game.
That'd be fun.
Some kind of like Munchkin Lower Decks, right?
Yes.
Like that. Yeah.
Just all as right. long as we all get to play sax.
All right. So, Terra Firma. Giorgio is dying. She's going through this. We get the whole exposition scene that we talked about last week, because we had a clip of it early, where she's dying because she's not only traveled 1,000 years through time, she's also traveled from one dimension to another. And we get our first clear reference. Jim exposed another reference in the prisoner code from last week. A first clear reference to the Kelvin universe. And we learn that we established that the Kelvin universe is part of the continuum, the multiverse of Star Trek. Anyway, the starship, the Discovery's AI, the starship's computer, comes up with a possible solution. They travel to a distant planet. Giorgio and Burnham beam down there, and they meet Carl, this enigmatic figure reading a newspaper from the future and sipping tea and wearing a bowler hat and sitting in front of a doorway. And Giorgio eventually goes through this doorway and ends up in the mirror universe, apparently, reliving her own life, specifically the choice to kill Burnham for treason. And at the end of the episode, she does not kill Burnham. She changes her life path and Burnham's life path by sparing her life. Meanwhile, in the real universe, quote unquote real universe, is it Prime? Is that the word that we use for the
Yeah, we're using Prime.
In the Prime universe, we find the trapped Federation ship, and all of our predictions were wrong. Mm. It what's interesting about it is that it's crewed by Kelpians. And Saru is fascinated by this, but we don't really figure out what's going on it yet. This is really a Giorgio episode. But last week I said Book was the only character other than Burnham that gets their own episode. Well, now I'm wrong. And now we have Giorgio. She also gets an episode or two. Yeah, two. So the main plot, the Burn plot, is kind of mostly just kicked down the road. Well, so what did you guys think? Abe, do you want to start us off?
Okay, so I am incredibly happy with this episode. I like, number one, that it is a Giorgio episode.
Yeah.
And even though Burnham is kind of like a key part to it,
yeah,
not every scene was with her and Burnham. It was like, this is Giorgio's time to shine. This is the actual idea. It focuses on her. They got to the planet itself very, very quickly.
Yeah.
They got to the mirror universe very quickly and let it progress. I'm also very, very glad that B plot of the burn was literally that just one scene. Because I think if we were dashing back and forward all the while, that would drive me insane. So this has given us time to breathe. There's stuff going on. We're likely to obviously return to that once either, we'll see what happens in the next episode. But at least we've we see a lot more Mirror Universe stuff, which I always love Mirror Universe stuff. So there's a lot more Mirror Universe stuff, which is fantastic. There's some interesting stuff happening, and all in all, pretty damn happy.
Jim?
So I've been almost ruining Sundays or Saturdays when we record the podcast, because, you know, I don't want to be the guy who is negative on Star Trek. That's not at all the space I want to be in.
This
week I found myself excited to come here and to talk Star Trek.
Good.
Not to nitpick or like I'll do the nitpick. Don't worry, guys. Not to get cold. There was a couple points where I was like, well, my wife called the show on this shit. But for the most part, I was very happy with this episode because it stopped being this mystery action adventure show and just became a character piece.
Yeah,
very much so. Yeah.
I was really struck. Maybe it was just me, but the writing just overall seemed very tight. Like there was more interesting shit before the opening credits in this episode than I've had for the last several episodes of this show. It was just better. It was just better written, and we'll get to some other stuff later on. But I almost felt like there were moments where Giorgio was critiquing Star Trek Discovery as a show. Like when you told me, Jim, that this show was written by the people who are show running the Giorgio spinoff, I couldn't help but feel like maybe they were taking a couple of pot shots on their way out. I don't know.
The cool thing about that is if this is the people who are going to be running it, it looks like it's in pretty damn good hands. The idea that if the episode of Giorgio was like, okay, this is what the show is going to be like, and it's like, oh my god, that was the worst thing we've ever seen, then it's like that writes that series off straight away. I'm very, very happy with this so far.
Yeah, I was very skeptical of a Giorgio show from the minute I first heard about it because I don't like her character. I love Michelle Yeoh. Like, she's a legend, right? Like, I would watch her in anything. But the idea of like a, you know, Section 31 show or all the different theories that were being thrown around just kind of left me cold, you know? But if the writing is like this and if Carl comes back, I'm in. I'm in for Carl. All right. Let's start off with some of the big stuff, right? What the hell do we think is going on? Like, Giorgio walks through this door and she's suddenly back in the Mirror Universe. Okay. What is happening? Who is Carl? What is Carl? Does anybody know what the hell is happening on this show?
No. And for once, there's a mystery plot that it can be any number of answers.
Yes.
Like it could be like I said, this could be like a Joseph's Ladder situation for those How to Get Made fans out there. This could be like Giorgio is having a moment where she is allowed to revisit her life and reanalyze her choices. And maybe if she makes new choices, it will free her from the genetic pool of the male universe.
Yeah.
Which is what I think they're going with, because Stamets is dead.
Yeah.
Male Stamets is dead.
Yeah.
And male Stamets was very much alive in season one.
Right.
Like, you don't get Wolka into, you know, back into the male universe without Stamets' help. The other thing is Owo has a Sulu skull. Owo in the episode that she appears in does not have a Sulu skull.
In so the
things
episode,
are happening around her, like Giorgio makes decisions and things are happening and the universe is adapting. But I don't think you can negate anything that we see in season one, because that's too much of a retcon. So I think we have a situation where she may make whole choices, and what we're going to get is we're going to get like a synthesized Giorgio. Maybe it's not Prime, maybe it's not Mill, but maybe it's some combination of the two out of this episode. Or maybe she went back in time, and they're just like, fuck it, the male universe doesn't count anyways. We can do whatever we want.
Well, there is a long tradition established by DS9.
Oh yeah.
Of killing main cast members in the Mirror Universe, right? So by the time DS9 ended, they didn't have any main cast members left in the Mirror Universe. They killed all of them, I think.
There's nothing to say that the Mirror Universe that she's traveled to is real, as in It could be like a simulation as such. Right. You just get a chance to relearn the stuff. The interesting I find more than anything else is Carl himself.
Yes.
Now, my immediate thought, oh, it's a Q. That was exactly what I thought. As soon as he turned up, and I thought he was going to not say what his name was, and he was, and if he did say his name, it would be something beginning with Q. Then he came to Carl. It's like, well, okay, you little bugger.
Yeah,
that's not a Q word.
I was expecting Quincy.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah. So it's like, but that just that little section there is so classic original series Trek. It's like that is like, oh yeah, we just had up on the planet, a man sitting there with a door, and you go, what the hell? But it worked. It's because it reflects classic Trek, and I like that it reflects classic Trek. Yeah. So yeah,
it was absurd and kind of, but also kind of deadpan at the same time.
It wasn't jokey. Like it wasn't winking at the audience. Like it presented an interesting visual that we weren't expecting as an audience.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Like, I'm not expecting a heavy set like City Gent sitting in the middle of this giant, you know, they called it empty, but you know, there was still trees in the background.
Yeah.
This empty sort of tundra. So it gave us an interesting visual, and I'm a sucker for an interesting visual.
Yeah.
And it gives us this character that has a lot of interesting, like the newspaper he's reading is the newspaper. Like, so one of the theories is that he's an embodiment of the Guardian of Forever.
Really?
Yes, because there's a doorway you have to travel through.
Okay,
and
sure.
B, he asks you, what is it that you want? And then he sort of provides a way to get it. And the other thing, the bigger thing, is the newspaper he's reading is the same newspaper Spock pulls up, the Star Dispatch,
mm-hmm.
that tells him that Edith Kilo must die.
Okay, all right.
So those are my evidence for the Guardian of Forever, because I foretold that. I'm like, that's just silly. It's just a doorway. Like, because in fantasy writing, doorways are like the opening act of any sort of like story. Like, Bilbo's going to get out that door, and it doesn't matter how Bilbo gets out that door, as long as he's out the door to do his thing.
Yeah. Well, someone I was reading through a load of stuff online, and someone said that the Edith Keeler episode could well be the start of the Mirror Universe. So the idea that this is also reflects that is a damn good nod to say, well, this is where it branched off from the Prime Universe. So we don't know.
So the newspaper is the same newspaper from Guardian of Forever.
Well, it's not the same newspaper, but it's the same. Like it's like a Daily Bugle. Like,
yeah.
Star Dispatch is the fictional newspaper they used in. Guardian of Forever.
Again, these people do not pick these at random. They know what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
What do we know about the people that made the Guardian of Forever?
Nothing.
Nothing at all, yeah.
Rather than being an embodiment of the Guardian, what if he's one of them?
He could be.
We don't know. So, at the in between episodes, Aid, you made a observation that what you were, one of the things that you speculated about is that we were going to get the Giorgio series was going to be like a morally ambiguous quantum leap.
Yes.
Yes. And I wanted that. Like, I want that so bad. And I want Carl to be Giorgio's Al.
Yeah. And it could still happen. It would work. Yeah. That's right.
Where she goes from like one alternate reality or through time to another every week, like fixing things. And Carl is there, like, you know, giving her tips and being her van, her guy in the van.
It'd be cool because it would be nice to see. I mean, again, you don't reintroduce these kind of characters that you hope and they turn up for one episode and they disappear. Especially someone that just turns up with a magic door that can send you through time. And you go, well, yeah, that was fine. So, yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
You know, we have these temporal accords in the Star Trek setting now, right? We're like, okay. Temporal accords, time travel is off limits. Okay, that's not going to stop people. Like, you can get in a starship, rock yourself around the sun, and go through time. Having a law that says don't do that does not make people not do it, right? Someone's still got to be patrolling the timeline. Someone's still got to be watching that shit. I think I'm still hoping that whatever force Carl represents is a representation of that self-appointed temporal interdimensional observer core and they need agents. They need field agents.
That'd be cool. Again, we are seeing a lot of nods to time travel, and if time travel is not a solution to the burn, the idea it's set up for another series is perfectly sensible.
We have a question from one of our observers. Carrie's here. Hey, Carrie. Do we know if Carl is in the new show? Has any casting been announced?
I don't think we know anything about the new show, apart from it's a potential Section 31 one, yeah.
The only things that were announced was that there was a new Star Trek show featuring Michelle Yeoh. It would be a Michelle Yeoh vehicle. And then it would be set sometime after season 3 of Discovery.
And we know the writers because you...
Yes. And the show writers will announce pretty soon thereafter. Because when it was announced, Michelle Yeoh's character was involved in Section 31, I think it was conjectural
that it
would be a Section 31 show. But the showrunners themselves, I do not believe I've been quoted as saying it's a Section 31 TV show.
Well, once we went 1,000 years into the future, the Section 31 connection just frankly doesn't make a lot of sense
anymore. Yeah, exactly. And we've been trying to do that with Cronenberg's character, try and tie it back to Section 31 every time. But this obviously is how it's going to work. But I think you're right. I think it was, there will be Michelle Yeoh thing. This is what's going to go on. So yeah. Interesting thing about Cronenberg's character, apparently he has been announced he's going to be in season 4 of Discovery.
Really?
So yes, so that character, if Michelle Yeoh is going to disappear at the end of this series to do her own thing, and Cronenberg's character stays behind, that also shatters that link between those two possibly being in the same series.
Unless season 4 is the retcon of season 3.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. It's the redo episode where we go through all the same stuff, but it's not much nicer.
You guys just said 10 minutes ago that we can't retcon the Mirror Universe stuff of season 1 because that would be too much. And now you're saying that it would be okay.
Jason, let me give you context. The reason why it would be too much would be because that's the very beginning of the series. This would just be a reboot of season 3 that was a sequel compendium tie-in to season 3. Like, we're not rebooting the whole TV show. We're not rebooting the whole timeline, because presumably Discovery still has to vanish from the timeline in order for them to appeal and solve the Klingon plot thread.
There's
so many bigger plots tied to season 1 that you just can't get away with Stamets. But with us being so far into the future, it doesn't matter what the hell we do, because
guys
are so tied into it.
They are not going to retcon an entire season of this show. All right. I'm going to make you eat that hat.
I'm not going to eat my hat.
I'm going to make you eat your hat. But anyway, I want to get back to that scene when Giorgio, because you brought this up already, Abe. When Giorgio says goodbye to the main cast, it feels very permanent. It feels like I'm leaving the show, and she's saying goodbye to the audience as well as to the main cast. Thoughts on that whole scene and that conversation, Jim?
Oh, I love the fact that she just turns to Tilly and goes, "Oh, it's Captain Saru's false command mistake," and then accepts, like actually accepts a hug from her. Like, see, that's the like, so you got your biting wet, you got your, like, my defense mechanisms are up. I'm wearing this stupid, you know, GoFit device to see if I wink out of existence.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm cruising at yellow alert, but I'm going to lower my shields long enough for Tilly to get a hug.
Yeah.
And for the camera to hold on it and the episode to just take an, like, just to breathe and just let it set. Like, I really appreciate that.
Abe?
Yeah. I think you're right. I think it almost is that kind of, okay, this is the last time you're seeing each other.
Yeah.
Because I think if it was just another mission, they would just disappear together and pop down there and then they come back and hey, everything's right, and now I'm off. But the idea is kind of, whether she's coming back from the universe, whether she's going to refuse to just rejoin Discovery afterwards, who knows? But I think this might be it, yeah.
Giorgio's role in the show has always been really weird in season 3. Like, she's never really had a place to fit in. They've used her as like the kick-ass character, like the character that comes in and rescues everybody with martial arts when the crew needs help. But thematically, she's kind of an outsider and she doesn't fit in with the Federation of the Future or Discovery of the Future. this is, to me, I felt like this is clearly going to be the Georgiou redemption story arc. We've dwelled often in this show about the many sins Georgiou has committed in her past. I mean, she eats Kelpians for breakfast, right? She's an evil person. But her comments in the Mirror Universe and her reactions to Tilly and others, I think are designed to show us that the Prime Universe has rubbed off on her, that she has stared into the abyss, and the abyss has stared back into her. And so by living in this universe for a while, yes, she's changed them, but they've also changed her. And now in this new story, she's forced to act on those changes and ultimately to acknowledge that she's not the same person that she was. And she'll never pay the ultimate price for all the terrible things she's done because it's a television show, but she will try to be good. She will go from lawful evil to chaotic good, right?
I knew you were just about to speak there. One interesting thing I found about this is if you look at the costumes that they go down to the planet with, the black, Georgiou has not got a communicator badge on the outside of her coat, which I find odd for a Section 31 character because she is actually a member of Section 31. Right. So I don't know if that's been a thing that she hasn't had one a badge all the way through. I just thought it was odd that she's technically part of the crew, but she hasn't got a badge. I just thought that was a weird thing as well. But her Mirror Universe encounters, she's several percent less snarky in the Mirror Universe than she's in the Prime Universe. It's really weird. It's like, you know, you're less snappy, you're less... So it's like, okay, it's almost like the mellow Georgiou, but yeah, you can still do your thing and, you know, grimace at people and give them withering looks, but you are... Yeah, maybe it's beneath the Empress status she's got in the Mirror Universe.
It's her role. Like, she's the outsider is why she's so snarky. But now she's the Empress and everybody's looking at her all the time, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those, so I've sort of reconciled the fact that, like, a few episodes ago, I said, like, Georgiou is the Trump photo in your family.
Right.
You don't get to just wash that away. We still have to live with these people and how you navigate that space. And that was because the show is Michael Bonham's show.
Yeah.
And Michael Bonham is very much written as surrogate daughter to Philippa Georgiou.
Right. That's right.
And the conflict there has always been, you look exactly like the woman I knew who raised me into Starfleet, into this life of Starfleet and service, but you're like fundamentally evil. Oh, so there's that dichotomy that Bonham's been wrestling with.
For sure.
And the thing that I've always been afraid with the Georgiou show is that they would wash their hands clean of what we've seen.
Yeah.
So one of my critiques of season one's Discovery is we have this interesting situation where Locke is from the male universe, living in the Prime universe, and he's having to navigate these waddles.
Yeah.
And the thing I thought would be interesting is what if he became like this weird anti-hero?
Yeah.
But in order for them to get Philippa onto the show full time, he becomes a cartoon villain.
Yep.
And she becomes this sort of like, I'm going to have this moment of compassion that leads to me being saved, and then we're just not going to reference, or we'll opaquely reference your past sins.
Yeah.
And that's really season two, Philippa, and my issue. Now the show has just given her Locke's plot thread. The whole thread of season one of how long can I stay pretending to be a thing before I become that thing is Philippa, and now she's having to reconcile that. And because we're actually toning that into the plot of two episodes, I think it's to the show's betterment.
Yeah.
If this was the plan to get Philippa Hale, I don't mind her showing up in a cowboy ball and getting beat up and making weird innuendo comments, because this episode of Discovery was so solid and it didn't rely on, it doesn't rely on references to Spock. References to Spock to get me to like Star Trek, easy. That's low-hanging fruit.
Right.
Doing your own thing to get me invested in Star Trek, that's very Star Trek thing to do, I'm on board for that.
Can you imagine the writer's room fight about giving this a two-episode, a two-parter?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so contrary to Discovery's tempo to do this as a two-parter. There's so many. Oh, it's a one-episode thing, right? But they gave it the room that it needed, and I like that.
Well, the last Mirror Universe episode was a two-parter as well. So that
was it. I thought it was one. Wasn't it like four? I thought.
Oh, I tell you, three parts, wasn't it?
Four. Yeah. Four. It was the whole half of the season. Yeah.
Yeah, those that weird 31-minute episode that's like a blink, like it's a cup of coffee, and you're like,
"What is?" Yeah, yeah. So the cool thing is we've seen a lot of Giorgio's reaction to Prime Burnham as a thing, and like I said before, oh god, here we go. You're talking to Book about, oh, have you kissed her yet? Oh, for God's sake, grow up. But now we're actually seeing the reaction, the to and fro between them. And we didn't get that. We only got what Giorgio implied was their relationship. Now we're actually seeing something actually physically. And I think that's pretty cool.
This is one of the things I was mentioning earlier. Like when Giorgio says to Burnham, look, you're just like the Burnham from my universe. All you want to do is control people. But that Burnham was honest about it. And you pretend you're not. And that felt to me, or when she says to Burnham, will you just please learn when to shut up? Like that, I swear to God, that's the writer trying to make an observation about the show that they're a guest writing for.
But this is why I thought this episode was so good, because we did get Burnham scenes. We did get a lot of stuff in it. And it was in it, say, the plots of against the Emperor was a Burnham thing. Everything was not Burnham. It was like, oh my God, it's since I'm in the universe, right, I've got to run to find Burnham. And there was actually stuff going on that, you know, it wasn't the focus. I half expected her not to show up because I thought, well, they're quick, they're going to give us some breathing room and actually do some stuff on Discovery and not actually have, but, you know, it's cool. So.
And it still allows the act, because I love the actress.
Yeah.
It allows her to play whole male universe. Like she's almost the Jokel in that scene, well, in the hallway where she gets thrown to the ground and she's like, you know, basically shouting hit me to Batman.
Yeah,
the scene was great.
Let's talk about Mirror Burnham for a minute. I decided that men in the evil men have the goatee, although we don't actually see anybody with a goatee in the Mirror Universe anymore, right, other than Spock. But the women all get like really heavy eye makeup. that's how you know they're evil, right? But I actually thought the actress for Burnham, I get her name. I'm terrible at pronouncing her name, so I need to learn that better. But Martin Green, is that her last name?
Mm-hmm.
The Martin Green did a wonderful job selling that character's point of view. When Giorgio asked her, like, why do you hate me so much? Like, what did I do to you? And it's like, you made me, everything I am is depending on you. I don't have a personal existence, and that's why I'm with Lorca, because he loves me for who I am, and she sells it. I felt sympathy for evil, twisted Joker Burnham in that moment, you know, and it was effective, and you can just see Giorgio's position, because she's in this terrible no-win situation of her own making. All Burnham wants is to be left alone to do her own thing. And if Giorgio gives her that, then all Burnham will do is kill her. Right? It's like, okay, if I give you the thing you want, if I give you the thing that you should have, it will mean my own death. And if you love somebody, you got to set them free. And it's a great moral conundrum. I love the way this show is going.
Can we talk about the background characters?
Yeah, sure.
I would touch on that as well. So yeah.
Okay, so the male universe gives us Arium from season two. It's not the original Arium who's playing Lieutenant Nelson, but the woman who's sitting next to, I think it's next to Owo, in the cafeteria scene, that's the actress from season two's Arium, who hasn't been cyberfied. Like, she hasn't been told into, like, because that accident never happened. So she's not in any makeup. She's just herself in this military uniform. We got Landru Vuitton, the security officer.
Yeah.
He's back. We finally see Meryl Cobble, who's got this really awesome sort of like red, like, I love that the physician uniform in this universe is just red, so you can't see the blood.
You see the blood, exactly.
Yeah, like when he shows up in the red and the gold, I'm like, that is some good design work right there.
Yeah.
So you've got all these sort of like background stories happening that it's just like, it's literally what it is. It's just in the background. Like, they don't focus on it. Like, I had to look it up that was the same actor, because her hair's colored slightly different from the flashback. Like, it's not a bright blonde as it was. It was more of a, I don't want to say dishwater blonde, but it was a darker blonde.
Yeah.
And so I had to actually look it up and be like, oh, they actually brought her back in to do just this guest cameo for like an episode or two.
Really
small booking. And just acknowledging the show's continuity via the male universe, I thought was really well done.
Eight?
Yeah, it was cool. Again, I also like that we got to see the background characters that haven't done anything in the Prime universe do something. We got a bit of, obviously, Detmer flying ships last time. We got a fight with with the security officer. And it's quite nice for them to see that. This is what you're going to do today. You're not going to be standing over there. You're going to be punching somebody. Sorry! Which is really cool.
Owo's duel was so much a flashback to the original series Mirror Universe episode, right? Where Sulu tries to take command. Is it Sulu?
Well, when Tilly shows up, that sort of felt like Chekhov's heel tone.
Yeah.
Because he kind of walks into the side and those are the two guys already waiting.
Yeah.
And the combat sequence did feel like the Sulu sequence when he shows up with his men in the sick bay.
Yeah.
It was cool. And we saw a lot of the crew doing stuff, Mirror Universe stuff that isn't just like they're plotting backstab. We see, you know, they're socializing by executing each other, but they are socializing, you know. But I just thought it was really cool. I even looked at like some of the characters to see who were playing, especially for Arium, to see if it was correct that there were the other actors back. And I've completely blanked the name. The guy who is on the bridge, who's, I think, is the comms officer, and I've completely blanked what his name is.
That would be Bryce.
Who's the other guy on there that we see?
Bryce, and then the guy in the fight is Reese.
Okay. Because there was like the listings for the characters and what they played and what they're credited for at the end of episodes. And the one guy was like, okay, you're the shuttle pilot, you're seconds comms officer, and isn't like till like, oh, you get a surname and the first name. It's like, oh my god, thank god for that. You know, it's nice that you've kind of seen these characters grow out a little bit at a time. Now you actually know who they are, and now we have a Mirror Universe idea of who they are in that respect. So it's nice to see, it's just nice to get them to do something.
Often when we saw the Mirror Universe in DS9, it was played almost as camp. You know, like they were so mustache twirling evil and deviant. But this episode felt more like the original series Mirror Universe, where you actually saw them living their lives, right? Like, you know, Kirk goes back to his stateroom and there's somebody there. And like, you get this sense like they have a life outside of the caricature of the Mirror Universe. And yeah, I love that, like you mentioned, that bit in the rec room where they're like throwing knives at each other and all kinds of, you know, they're partying. And you get the sense that the Mirror Universe actually has like a life there. And you could maybe, again, it's the gamer in me, but like, okay, I could run a game in that setting.
Yeah.
Right? It feels like you can immerse yourself in it. There's enough there that I can bite my teeth into and I can imagine that whole universe.
Nice. It's like classic Mirror Universe and Enterprise Mirror Universe. We definitely got the idea. You kind of like you aligned yourself with the next person who might be captain if they can take Kirk out.
Yeah.
And all these sideways glances between all the crew members. You go, which one knows about this? Because it's like, okay, Stamets is dead. Do they know Stamets is dead? Because Tilly seems a bit suspect. And then you've got Colbert. He must have known. Come on. So it's like, this is really interesting to see exactly how that plays out.
And then at the end, when Giorgio doesn't kill Burnham, all of the, her six second, like the body, oh, whoa, and everybody, they're all like looking at each other like, holy shit, you didn't kill her.
Yeah.
Like, the Empress has gone weak. Empress has gone soft. What are we going to do? And they have to do it all with side glance, like sideways looks. It's great.
She does put her in the agonizer, though, so that's something.
Yeah, whatever it is.
If Captain Killy is not killed next episode, I'm going to be a little disappointed.
Don't.
See, here's the thing. They've already killed off Captain Killy. Like, they've all betrayally killed off all these characters with that one line of dialogue when they get back from the male universe saying that Discovery was destroyed.
Yeah,
like, that's why they thought the ship was lost, because they found the wreckage of a Discovery that had a slight wheeled quantum variance that they ruled to be a result of the spoil drive.
Yeah.
But if we can get an actual, like, awesome Captain Killy death sequence, like if she stages this coup and it takes Bonham and Giorgio to take her out,
yeah,
sign me up for that.
You're breaking my heart, Jim.
Okay, so we're
not going to get a Captain Killy TV show. Use it.
Let's say if that Discovery source book comes out, that's what you can set your next campaign in. So you'll be right.
I've
got a question as well. Yeah. Now, obviously, we mentioned in the actual episode, we've got Lorca. Okay, Lorca is the thing that's plotting. Now, what ship is he captain of in the Mirror Universe? I assumed it was Discovery.
He's captain of the Borean.
Right, thank you. Because it's like, when they first got on there, I thought, okay, what ship is this? Is this the Shinzo or is this the Discovery? And then it's the Discovery. And I think, okay, obviously Lorca's going to step out of the shadows in a minute. He didn't show up. It's like, so where is he? So I was getting very confused with exactly where everyone's placement was along this thing. But yeah, I just want to clarify that.
All right, so I want to, the one last thing in the Mirror Universe I want to look at before we wrap up is Saru, who's a slave on the ship, serving everybody drinks. And I really saw Giorgio's shock when she sees Saru, and contrasting that with the captain that she saw in the Prime Universe. That seems like a moment where Michelle Yeoh really helps us to understand that Giorgio is forced to kind of start asking questions about herself and her own behavior and about the universe she's in. I feel like she came to respect Saru. She may not have ever admitted it because she's got to be snarky, but she's come to respect Saru. And now when she sees Saru as a slave, she knows that's not right. And this brings her home, and she's got to start asking. Well, anyway.
I think this is I see what you're saying, Jason, and I love it. And if the show was better, it would have owned that moment. But because Saru is constantly being portrayed as not Bonham, he's not right. The choices he makes, even in this episode, he has a captain decision to make at the very beginning. And he's like, we can't risk the entire fleet safety on one coal set. And the admiral in private, now gratefully it's not in front of people, but in private he's like, the crew's never going to be able to look at you again if you allow one of your crew members to die without putting up a fight.
Right. And I want to note that last week, you guys speculated that the Admiral and the Federation would become the bad guys for next season.
Oh, I still think that is.
Yeah.
I gotta say, Admiral Vance is. I'm starting to turn into an Admiral Vance stan here. Like I he's doing a great job of making himself seem very compassionate and sympathetic. And if they decide to make the Federation into the bad guys, they're going to have to earn that because that's quite a heel turn.
They're showing him sympathetic to other Federation or Starfleet members.
Right.
What a better way of having someone be, oh my God, he's the ultimate villain, by having them be portrayed as good all the way through the season.
Yeah. The devil's always handsome.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Vance is great. He's like so sympathetic. Like, hey, I fucked up when I was young. Like, I get it. But him making him overriding Saru and then giving him like an educational teachable moment that I kind of like.
When he was playing out, the only thing I'm thinking is, why don't you want your most powerful weapon in your fleet? What are you hiding, Vance?
Yeah,
what are you hiding?
Yeah. I hear you. Anyway, K, Can you walk us through again how Saru lost the Fear Ganglia, and how did that happen? And does Georgiou know about it? And can she help Saru in this?
So to condense season two, essentially what happened was they encountered the Sphere, which was this ancient creature that was dying. And it wanted to die, but before it died, it wanted to pass on its knowledge. And because it was so near death, and Saru is so empathetic as a creature, it saw it entering. Saru saw it entering his death throes.
Yeah,
like biological, like Vahai is what they mentioned.
Yeah,
and he survived it. So right. He came out on the other side, and he's the first Kelpian to do that in centuries. And then they go back to the home planet, and they essentially do that with the tractor beam, sort of laser beam the whole planet, and everyone goes through their death throes in a night, and then wake up on the other side, and they're all like, you know, beefier, I guess.
They're all fearless now.
And I always, like, when that happened, like, even rewatching the season, when that happens, I'm like, first off, there was so many Prime Directive violations here.
Yeah.
Secondly, what happens when the oppressor becomes fearless? Like, when the oppressed becomes, like, I've always thought, like, Kelpians are going to wind up being the bad guy at some point in the universe, because they've been kicked around and culled and eaten for 100 years, and all of a sudden, they don't have feel, and not only do they not have feel, but they have like built-in weaponry. So that's always kind of been my thought. Can we talk about the Kelpian in that?
Was that alluded to in the Mirror Universe stuff with the Kelpians, that they knew that was going to happen? So that's why they culled them at a certain point in their life cycle, so they could evolve to be fearless.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
We get one scene where we find that Federation starship. We speculated that it might be the Discovery from the Calypso timeline. We threw around a bunch of other ideas. But ultimately, it turns out that we're building connection. We're making the audience care about that starship by making it full of Kelpians, which was an interesting move. Jim, thoughts on that episode, on that scene?
I didn't like the costume.
Hmm.
And so the costume is the exact same costume that his sister wore when she was like Speaker of the Planet. So
it was precisely what I thought it was. I thought, oh yeah. My God, they're not going to do that.
It's the same costume and more 1,000 years removed. Like you can keep a costume and like change it a little bit. Give me a little bit of visual imagery.
Why isn't she in a Starfleet uniform?
Why does she have to look exactly like his sister did to get Saru to Kale? Like, the fact that Kelpians are in space, like, that is alone, like, huge. But now the Kelpian looks like to be the Speaker of the race, like, the most, like, essentially the Pope.
Yeah.
You know how she was played, that character was played. And, like, you can look at Pope costumes through artwork and slightly modify them, you know, just a little bit without changing its popiness.
Its popiness, that's funny.
So how long ago did they say the signal was sent? Because they gave a rough estimation, didn't they? Because did they say, oh, this signal's from 100 years ago? I think we're going to see some kind of time dilation effect where for the ship in the thing, nothing's changed. It's been 24 hours. So again, we're not going back to Saru's time, but we are still seeing. We're gonna meet that character again. The idea that we're gonna go there, it's not that person, is gonna be ridiculous.
Are we gonna save her life?
We shall see.
Yeah, I think Aid's right. I think it's going to be a Kelsey Grammel shows up on the voyage of the Bozeman. It's like, can I help you? Obviously, like I think it's gonna be a situation where, because the costume is the Pope costume. Yeah. Now they haven't said that she plays the same role in Kelpian society. But the visual cue that we get is it's the same uniform used by his sister.
Right.
And therefore, is if not a direct relation to him, you know, distantly removed over 930 years, then at least has a prominent place in their society. That she's captain of a starship.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, we hit a lot of the big elements of this episode. Is there more that we have not touched on, guys? Abe, you surely have a long list of technical errors that we
Yeah, I do.
I had so much fun.
Yeah, I honestly can't think of too many things. I honestly, because it was so character driven.
Yes.
There's the weird thing about like when they got the when they land, they discover what the planet was to like beam them down to. Instead of just literally beam them to Carl's location, they decided to beam them somewhere so they could wander around for an hour and a half before they actually got there. I mean, there's that thing. But apart from that, I mean, and again, where did they know which way to go? If they knew which way to go, why didn't they just put them there in the first place? But that's pretty much it. I mean, it's pretty damn good. I mean, they've done some good stuff.
My wife called one thing. We were watching it. And when Adira comments, when they get the signal and it's that teaser of, oh, you gotta get Saru. And my wife's like, just hit your comm badge. You can beam right there.
That's true.
But you don't have to cut that scene anymore. You can just do it as a continuation. Yeah. And I'm like, ooh, that's a good dramatical point. That's a good drama point that you bring up, that this new technology deprives you of the right stuff running down the hallway scene.
Right, right.
Because now you can be anywhere on your ship, and get the captain this information thing takes out the urgency of that sequence.
Also, the thing, also with that little bit of the Adira scene, I'm not particularly happy with the relationship between Stamets and Adira, because I think the idea that she just treats them as a child all the while when they're inhabiting 900 years worth of knowledge, that kind of narks me off a little bit, because they know what they're doing. Yeah, the idea we're constantly. I mean, obviously, for Stamets himself, he probably sees them as that, and that's why that's how he reacts. But the weird thing about that was, as well, is the whole mentioning of Grey, and that's why she's up to see, I did it again. That's why they're upset, because Grey's not appeared in the. It's like, yeah, but we didn't even know if that was a thing that was supposed to happen. So it's like you mute. Some people would be like, thank God I haven't got the voices anymore. So it's a kind of almost like that scene was there to remind us that that is still a thing happening, but yet to expand upon it. So we've still got that tiny little bit of breadcrumbing through the episode. But again, they didn't spend 15 minutes on it and just take us away from the other storyline, which I think was very, very good. It's just enough there to remind us this is a thing that's going to pop up at some point in time, and it's going to become relevant.
Yeah, Jim.
Well, first off, thank you. There was a point I wanted to bring up, and I totally escaped me because I was, again, having so much fun talking this episode, and it's a nice, you know, I've said for the last several weeks, when Discovery is character, I am invested. Like, I love these characters. I want to see them be challenged and interact and solve those challenges. But when it's about plots and mysteries and how can we save the universe, I'm just nodding off, like you said. Now, this brings up a good conversation about paratext. And they say this because Star Trek Discovery is engaging in paratext on Instagram. Crewmen are given their own personal logs every week on Mondays, and they'll like three-minute little burst of information, but it's character information. And this week's little bout was with Stamets talking about his dad.
Oh, right.
And the fact that, like, I understand why it's not being incorporated in this episode, because this is not Stamets' episode.
Right.
Narratively, it would be wasted. But the really interesting pieces of character work, dialogue, the actors are bringing their A game to it. Like, yes, they're recording lines in a booth, but they'll not just phoning it in, you know, if we forgive the pun. And the writing's really specific, like really on point. Like, Linus pining for Giorgio for the movie date is funny, but also touching.
Yeah.
And I think with Discovery, more than any other Star Trek show, so we've always had like multimedia things. This show opened up talking about books,
yep.
Star Trek novels. I think with Discovery, they're really using the multimedia framework, I think to its detriment, because they're not advertising it on the show.
I was just about to say that. I had no idea that existed. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't know that because they're not telling you on the show, hey, go to Instagram / Star Trek logs, whatever it's called, to hail, you know, Jet Reno complain about the holodecks. Like, did you know the holodecks were on Discovery? They are. Or to hail, like, Owo talking about her loss of connection and how she's not grounded herself and she's just sort of floating through her day job. Like, these are really interesting pieces of captain's logs or personal logs that is not in the show because, A, the show is not about characters. It's about plot mostly. And, B, we're not advertising it. Like, we're not telling people, hey, go over here for this, or hey, go over here to read this novel. And I think that's to the show's detriment because they are leaning in the continuity.
You know, this reminds me of the Watchmen stuff. Like the HBO's Watchmen had a weekly online data file. I can't remember the name of something, the PDpedia, where a character on the show, the FBI agent Petey, was collecting all of these data files that illuminated various aspects of the Watchmen universe and also explained what happened to some of the characters that we never saw, like Dan, like Night Owl. And all of that stuff, in Watchmen, it felt appropriate because, of course, the Watchmen comic had large text sections in the back. So it felt like, okay, this is their updated version of the Under the Hood bio from the original Night Owl or whatever. But they never told you about that either. Like, only you had to be a hardcore fan and go looking for it, basically, to find it. And I think that I'm no marketing expert, but I think that that's what the marketing people are thinking. They're like intentionally not advertising it. And they want to let the Star Trek fan community, which we have to acknowledge is famous, right? Like, Star Trek fans are
infamous.
And we're gonna make this Instagram account with all the actors giving their A game for these little 3-minute logs, and we're gonna sort of Easter egg it, and we're gonna let the fans find out about it and spread that word organically, and make it part of the experience of, like, hey, did you hear about this? And make the whispering campaign part of the show.
The irony being, as well, though, is that you could do those sections pre-credits every episode.
Yeah, you could.
You could have a different character every episode, and you go, okay, who are we going to find out? And you'd actually give a crap about the characters. It didn't have to tie into the story. We've had a couple of Colbert personal logs audios over the actual beginning of episodes, yeah, while we're going around. So the idea we do that, and I mean, not the OWO stuff, I didn't know anything about that.
Narratively, though, okay, no showrunner is going to let you do that. If you open the show with a 3-minute personal dialogue by Linus about his love experience, about his pining for Giorgio, the audience now expects a Linus episode in the next hour.
But this is the irony being, as well, because I'm watching it on Netflix, I don't get any breaks. So yeah. I don't get the American style thing where they do the teaser thing, you get a break, and then you get the rest of the show. Yeah. So you could, but I don't know. It would have been cool to, even if it's just audio logs. I don't know. But again, like you say, it's a real shame that those character moments are being lost on people.
Yeah, yeah.
And to bring it back to this point, like, Stamets has no father figure. Like, he was desperate for his father's attention, and that's been established in the show when he's recording the log to his brother before they jump into the future. But it's being reinforced by the fact that, like, it's a sad scene where this kid is sitting at the top of the stairs counting the number of fireballs on this piece of carpet waiting for their dad's approval because he got a good report call. And like, sort of being there and acknowledging the fact that, yes, Adira is this 930-year-old, however, you know, being, but they are still essentially a kid at this point of their development.
Yeah.
And sort of like how Stamets is reconciling these two thoughts, like to your point, Aide, it was beautifully written in this little, you know, Instagram post, but I only had to sign up for Instagram so I could just listen to these little podcasts, these little 3-minute interludes, because again, character is why I'm here for Discovery.
Yeah.
So any character I get, I'm desperate for.
But we've also seen already that we've had the discussion about Adira between Culber and Stamets in their quarters.
Yeah.
So come on, use some of these ideas that you've got. Yeah, put it in there, because again, you saying that as a motivation for why he acts that way makes it a lot more sensible. Gives me a good reason why he's doing it. So the idea that we're just going, oh, okay, well, you know, Burke, the person who's looking over, go, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm okay. I'll get on with it. I'm fine. So it's nice to see. Well, that is the reason for doing so. And again, maybe it's one of those breadcrumbs that's going to come to fruition later on, and we're going to see something actually said in the show about that thing. But yeah,
was the other engineer? Was her name Jet?
Yeah, Jet Reno.
Jet Reno. That's Reno. I've been thinking about Adira as a replacement for Reno in the dynamics of the show, especially in the engineering room with Stamets. When we last saw Reno, it resulted in Stamets almost killing himself climbing through a Jeffries tube. But Adira is very good for Stamets. And I think that the show is evolving, is swapping out those characters from a dysfunctional. I think the reason why we saw Stamets almost die in the Jeffries tube is to show us that his relationship with Reno was bad for him. That Reno was constantly egging him on and being snarky, and it got Stamets. It brought out all the worst parts of Stamets. But now he's got someone that he can be a mentor figure to. And yes, Adira is 1,000 years old. But Adira has this weird, like, two-part identity, right? They are simultaneously 1,000 years old and also a 16-year-old kid. And so that means that the most important parts of both get emphasized. They are the most 16-year-old kid you've ever seen, and they are also the wisest 930-year-old character you've ever seen, right? They have to be both. Mm-hmm. And so Stamets gets to be kind of this adopted father. They did a poster of the Discovery crew, and in the poster for season 3, and in the poster, Adira is between Stamets and Culber. Like, it's this sort of new little nuclear family that they're building there. And Jim, you've commented on it as a kind of adoption.
They've Cobol has the line to Joel Joe, like, if I had time, I would have kids.
Yeah.
So that's something Cobol is interested in.
Yeah.
And the one person in that equation that would be standoffish towards that is Stamets. Like, Stamets has difficulty relating to his significant other, let alone relating to a child.
Yeah.
And now, through through Stamets' own narcissism, because he's relating so much of his own experiences to Adira, he's allowing himself to grow and to put himself and make himself emotionally vulnerable. I think that's very interesting.
I also think that because we've got the not necessarily constant, but the frequently referenced dynamic between Burnham and Giorgio as a mother-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
We didn't want to put another one in there. But if Giorgio's going, the idea we replace that with this as the new family on Voyager. Oh, Voyager, see, there you go, on Discovery. I think works well. I think it'd be quite cool. But I think if we move from one dynamic to another dynamic, and it's a different one, but it'd be interesting. Yeah.
Well, come back next week. We're gonna be here for the next episode of Terra Firma. I'm excited. I'm eager to watch the show.
Now, can they stick the landing? This is the question. This is the classic Doctor Who cliffhanger episode where the second episode, oh my god, what did you do that for? So,
Also, the season is longer than I thought. It's 13 episodes rather than 12. And that's got to be because of Terra Firma. Like, if it would have been a 12 episode season if Terra Firma had been one episode.
One episode,
but the writers must have insisted on two, and that stretched the calendar out a little bit.
Well, to the point, like, Enterprise is good in season four because they have these two-part episodes. They have got these 2 to 3-part episodes.
Yeah.
Well, they can save money. Like, that's what the whole reason. Like, it wasn't a narrative concern; it was a budgetary concern.
Oh.
Like, we have to build sets for one episode. Why don't we just reuse those sets for the next 2 episodes and save some dough? That's why we get the Vulcan trilogy, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And I kind of think that's the same thing here on Discovery. Maybe they're not trying to save budget, but narratively speaking, I'm more invested, I'm more interested because we've been allowed to have moments where Tilly gives Georgiou a hug.
Yeah.
Things can breathe in this episode.
Well, we'll be back to see if the mystery of Carl is, maybe it's Carl with a Q. Or maybe we'll just, maybe the Guardian of Forever connection will be explained.
Or he's a traveler. Or he's a prophet from the Celestial Temple. Like, there's so many things.
It's related. Or, yeah. I mean, yeah, that'd be cool. But yeah, I think Guardian Forever is the winner at the moment. Yeah.
Peace out, everybody. Live long and prosper.